Hello everyone and welcome back to the Damage Report. It's a Wednesday. They've been a lot this year. J.R. Jackson, what do you anticipate for this, the fourth Wednesday?
I've got big news Wednesday for you, Jonathan. Big news Wednesday. The sun just came out. It's a frigid 57 degrees in Los Angeles.
Frigid. No, there's apparently a big storm coming here, though. We get the worst weather, man. Anyway, okay. Here's the thing. Normally, Big News Wednesday means we have a lot to talk about. I don't want another Big News Wednesday. I just want Blase Wednesday. But I don't know. We're gonna have to see if it happens.
Yeah,
a little bit scary.
You know what? It's a gift and a curse. You know, you don't want to have a Blase Wednesday, but you kind of want to have a Blase Wednesday. I feel you.
Let's see. We're gonna see, but thank you for being here. By the way, we wanted to greet JR in luxurious artistic fashion. So what we've got for you is, you already had it on Twitch, so you got this on Twitch. On YouTube now, for our YouTube members, Sprocket is an emoji, and he's a particularly adorable one, by the way. The emoji is exactly as chill as the dog himself. It never complains. It's down for whatever.
Never complains. Down for whatever. We'll sit there and just look at you, just like this one. There, so you get the full effect.
Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, I see a boost of the stream happening on Twitch. Thank you for that. So on YouTube, throw up your sprockets if you got them. I love to see both my dog and now JR's dog there as well.
So how do people get the sprockets? Just so we know. How do we get them? Who are these folks that have them?
So it's available on Twitch for Twitch subs, but also our YouTube members. If you're watching on YouTube, there's a join button. You can click on that. There's a few different tiers, but the emojis are available to all of the tiers. So you get access to all of them. And we've got more planned. I actually made one yesterday. Very excited to roll it out. Maybe this week, maybe the start of next week. We'll have to see. We have to see. I don't want to throw them all out there at once.
There's another dog in there. Is that your dog, John?
My dog Hilo, yeah.
Oh, there
yeah,
the
dragon's fictional, but those are, yeah, my dog and your dog. Anyway, thank you everybody who's joining us. Regardless of where you're watching, we appreciate you being here. Feel free to hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already so that people know we're live. I'm at some point gonna tweet about it. My pre-show went right up until the beginning of this one, so I was a little bit rushed for time. We're gonna be a bit rushed to fit in all of our content because we got a lot here. We're gonna be giving you updates on the impeachment trial, on the filibuster, some of what Biden's been up to in the areas of climate change and immigration. And then we're gonna talk a little bit about Marjorie Taylor Greene. She had so much crazy stuff revealed in the last 24 hours that we couldn't fit it entirely into either the pre-show or the show. We had to split it up evenly between the two. So I don't know if it's gonna be fun exactly, but we're gonna learn a little bit more about one of the newly elected representatives for the Republican Party. With that, JR, you ready to do this thing?
I'm ready to do it.
Okay, let's do it. We are inching closer day by day to the Senate trial of Donald Trump following his historic second impeachment. Now, there was an attempt to stop it entirely. Rand Paul, he tried to force a vote on the constitutionality of impeaching the former president. That was tabled. Paul's motion was killed on a 55-45 vote, with 5 Republicans joining all of the Democrats, meaning that 45 Republicans voted for Paul's effort. Now, he says, Rand Paul, that the fact that 45 Republicans sided with him shows that impeachment is dead on arrival. And here's his argument. If you voted that it was unconstitutional, then how in the world would you ever hope to convict somebody for this? That 45 of us, almost the entire caucus, 95% of the caucus, voted that the whole proceeding was unconstitutional. This is a big victory for us. Democrats can beat this partisan horse as long as they want. This vote indicates it's over. The trial is all over. I would say, in terms of metaphor, I wouldn't talk about beating a horse to death because we are trying to convict him over him sending people to the Capitol where they beat a cop to death. So I would choose the words just a little bit more carefully, since you know that mob was murderous, Rand Paul. By the way, Rand Paul, they don't love you. You think that if they'd run across you, you would have fared well in that, but he's moving past it. Hey, maybe it shows that he's able to rise above concerns for things like democracy or his own life. But anyway, JR, he does have a point. 45 Republicans did apparently think that it's unconstitutional to impeach, or I guess convict based on impeachment, the former president.
Yeah, 45 Republicans are still on board with Rand Paul, including, by the way, I'm sure you mentioned Mitch McConnell, who many people believed had this potential opportunity to come out and convict Trump because they're battling factions, they're warring against each other. Mitch McConnell's people said they're going to declare war on Trump's people because look, he lost his power when he sabotaged the Georgia runoffs, which, as we know, took most of Mitch McConnell's power. Mitch McConnell always has power because for some reason people listen to him when he has none. But so this whole battle that's been put forward actually didn't ever really happen. So the people who thought that these Republicans would have this awakening and suddenly realize that Trump is out of power and Trump potentially doesn't have any more of his bully pulpit and he can't tell them what to do and he can't tweet about them to ruin their chances because there's not an election right now, by the way. All these things I want people to start noticing. There's no more, I'm worried because Trump is in office and I want to make sure I'm still there to be the guiding light, the normal Republican there. There's no more, I'm just scared of Donald Trump because his supporters are rabid. I guess maybe that's the one thing that is left, but he's not really able to motivate and push them the same way he did before. That's why he's so upset about losing his voice on Twitter and not having these platforms to continue to rally. He said before, when I rally, I get a chance to rile you guys up. So that's what he likes to do. So we see 45 Republicans who still prove the point that Donald Trump was just another character in their same party that likes to do these things. He was just one that wasn't able to hide it as well as Rand Paul was able to. So now Rand Paul can't hide it as well either because now he has to follow behind the guy who's openly and explicitly anti-American. Now they all are.
Yeah, and Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell was going to take a brave stand. Even if he'd voted for it, it wouldn't be a brave stand. It would be like an attempt to stop Trump from, controlling the party or whatever. But I look, we can roll the tape. We can't because we don't have it. But in theory, someone could get it and then we could roll it. Yeah, I was always really, is pessimistic the word? Cynical, I guess. Not sold on the idea that Mitch McConnell was going to, or regardless of Mitch McConnell, because Mitch McConnell at least has a sort of institutional pragmatic reason to do it, maybe, but that 17 would support it, I was never convinced about that. Never. And I could be proven wrong. I would love to be proven wrong. Quote me if I'm proven wrong. But Rand Paul does have a point. The point isn't exactly what he thinks it is. I would say the point is that even Trump engaging in a months-long attempt to extrajudiciously overthrow the election, speaking positively about militia members who tried to kidnap a governor, sending people to the Capitol, people dying as a result of it, people going to the Capitol, having said online that they want to assassinate leaders. All of that is only enough to potentially sway a couple of Republicans. So Rand Paul is right that nothing can get through to them and that partisanship is what is driving this, just not exactly in the direction that he seems to think it is. Oh, and also, as many people have pointed out, his math is terrible. It's not 95%, it's 90%, but it's Rand Paul. What do you expect?
It doesn't matter. No one has to pay attention to that. Remember those times the Republicans always said we have to go after the leaders of terror organizations because they recruit and they'll build up their power. We have to make sure we don't negotiate with terrorists. All those things that say about terrorists and terrorist groups and leaders. This guy is one of them. They came actually towards you guys this time. And so the degree to which they don't really care about violence, anger, insurrection in our country is just—it's put on full display here. So even if you're afraid of the MAGA folks that want to attack the country, that means you're afraid of terrorists. So that's why you don't want to use the term. That's why they used it over and over and over and over and over again when it was foreign-born terrorists that were doing these things. The reason they did that is because they want to make sure there's this differentiation between the two. So if we start calling this guy what he is, then we can no longer continue to heap that negative term on other folks only because they're the only terrorists in the world. Not that they're not horrible folks for doing the violence that they do, but there's violence that can cross these types of lines. And it starts to take down this veneer of America being this bastion of freedom and everyone is such a patriot, perfect person that loves our democracy. There are many, many Americans that want nothing to do with our democracy, want nothing to do with it. And many of them are elected officials and they just voted and told you that. So this whole thing that I think it's obvious that the lines are drawn over what kind of terrorists are scary and what kind aren't. And they're only scary here if they push you to do the wrong thing, which Rand Paul is very happy to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it reminds me of during the actual impeachment vote, the anonymous Republicans saying, I want to vote to impeach him, but I'm worried about being killed, which is sort of the problem. But again, Rand Paul doesn't care about that.
Not realizing, not realizing how bad that is.
Exactly, or that that's not going away, and that you refusing to take a stand is not going to help it to go away. We'll see the trial get underway. Maybe there will be things that'll happen during the trial that will sway 12 additional Republicans to convict Trump. I'm not betting all my money on it. I'm saving my money for GameStop.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Yeah, we talked about the ending of the filibuster yesterday, but we're gonna do it again today because it's important and it didn't go away since yesterday. Mitch McConnell is apparently very satisfied with himself based on the back and forth he had with Chuck Schumer about the future of power sharing in the Senate and about the filibuster. He had this to say in a tweet. When we put up this tweet, I want you to look at the face he's making in that picture. Wow. Anyway, today I made clear that if Democrats ever attack the key Senate rules, it would drain the consent and comedy out of the institution. A scorched earth Senate would hardly be able to function. It wouldn't be a progressive's dream. It would be a nightmare. I guarantee it. I understand that he knows what he's doing with that tweet. And if you have paid attention to any of politics, unless you woke up from a coma mid TDR today, the sheer hypocrisy in that tweet is such that like it should bring down all of Twitter. Like it shouldn't be able to stand with how fake and false he is. And the rage I feel at seeing that, considering all that's on the line, it's a good thing I'm not Carrie. I'll just say that based on how that. Okay. So you're worried about attacks against the Senate. Yeah, we were too. Remember, you're voting to not convict Trump, apparently. So, but no, we're not talking about attacks against the Senate as in attacks that actually kill people. We're talking about reform to something that's only been a tradition for a little bit. And draining the consent and comedy, JR, the Senate wouldn't be able to function. And that's not something that Mitch McConnell wants, a non-functioning Senate.
That'd be brand new to this country. In fact, you know, the approval rating of our Congress might also drop below 75% because it's at an all-time high. You know, the most approved body in all of our government is our Congress because people love them so much because there's never anything tied up. There's never any partisan battles. There's never any tricky brazicky moves that the leader will pull to make sure only his things happen and the things that happen for the American people won't. None of that ever happens under Mitch McConnell. This is crazy. I'm glad he's preserving the normal, the consent and comedy of our Senate. Come on, bro. So as he pushed through only all of these judicial nominees and judicial appointments and confirmations for Trump at an all-time high and chuckled about it every time he had a chance to talk about it. He'll do that in front on TV and then come and tweet something like this and not expect anyone to go, well, that doesn't add up. What are you talking about? And the folks that do, doesn't matter. Those folks don't support him anyway. He has his own cabal of idiots that'll be always willing to vote for him.
I think I think you're sort of right. I think he knows exactly what he's doing, and he knows that it doesn't matter that we point out that it's incredibly hypocritical, that his idea of a Senate that doesn't function is sort of funny when, you know, he made sure that there was an automatic filibuster on literally every piece of legislation, which if you believe that the filibuster is some sort of tradition that goes off to dinosaur times, it doesn't look like that. That's not how it's supposed to function. The fact that a filibuster can be broken with 60 votes, that is in the same way that the filibuster isn't actually a part of Senate rules. That's a relatively new one itself. That 60 could become 59, or, and get this, it could be 50, 50 votes to break that. You could modify that in any number of different ways. He stole a SCOTUS nominee and he knows that he did it. And when he was talking about Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation, he made very clear that he knew exactly how transparently hypocritical it was, and it doesn't matter because he values the power he can get over being consistent or integrity or whatever BS stuff that really doesn't count for anything in DC. And so, am I mad at Mitch McConnell? Yes, as every rational human being should, but I'm not surprised by Mitch McConnell, and I don't expect anything more from Mitch McConnell. What I do, maybe not expect, but I'm willing to push for, is for the two who can actually do something about this to change. Mitch McConnell's not gonna change, but Kristen Sinema, Joe Manchin, perhaps they can. Now, Joe Manchin says, I will not vote to bust the filibuster under any condition on anything that you can think of. I believe very strongly in bipartisanship. And Kristen Sinema apparently said under no circumstances would she reverse course. Okay, so their argument is that we need the filibuster to create bipartisanship. And I would say that I want you to demonstrate literally any evidence that that's what it does, because it doesn't. The filibuster means that you don't get bipartisanship, you get, I almost swore, nothing. I'll say you get nothing. You get jack nothing. That's what you get with the filibuster existing with the Republicans in the minority. You get no solutions to any problems. That's what you get. Now, without the filibuster, you could in theory have bills actually be considered and potentially even passed. And under those conditions, then maybe you could have some bipartisanship. You could have some Democrats and some Republicans actually talking about what needs to be in it and going back and forth. That is not what we have now. Continuing the filibuster means that we will not have that in the future. They are either lying or wrong, and we need to make sure that the American public knows about it. Because if necessary, Kristen Sinema, I hope you've enjoyed your time in the Senate. If you're going to be the block on all legislation, then you can get the hell out of there because we don't need you. You could be replaced very easily. And I look forward to primary challenges to her and to Joe Manchin continuing, hopefully in the very near future.
I'm curious how you read that last line of his tweet. It wouldn't be a progressive's dream. It would be a nightmare. I guarantee it. What did you think he means? Because I have a certain thought process of what that means and why it's working.
What do you think it means?
Okay. This whole thing about destroying the process of the Senate would be a nightmare. That's not about this sitting Congress right now, or this sitting Senate that just got sworn in. He's talking about when we win again, because that's all Republicans ever talk about when they're trying to fight back against the whenever the Democrats win an election. It's always, you guys got to be careful, because when we're back in power, we're going to do it to you. And then you're not, that's the nightmare he's talking about. And then he's separated, it'd be a nightmare too. I guarantee it, as a separate paragraph, basically, in this tweet, which means I guarantee you, I'm going to make sure that we pass the most destructive policies and laws possible with a 51 majority the next time we're in office. And then you're not gonna like it. It's gonna be a nightmare for you the next time. I guarantee it. Why is he guaranteeing it's gonna be a nightmare right now? It'd be a nightmare for who? For progressives to get something done? Why'd that be a nightmare for us? The nightmare would be, we're gonna do it to you, because they always say they're gonna do it to you. Mm-hmm. And then Democrats go, oh my God, they're gonna win again, they're gonna do it to us. How about you mobilize and make sure that you put in policies to make sure that the elections are free, fair, and allow everyone to vote? Because we already know the majority of Americans by far in every election always vote for Democrats. And so in this case, when new guys come in and you're worried about it flipping back to the Republicans, and then now you're gonna be destroyed. How about you make sure you put things in place that will allow a normal process of elections to happen, and then it's a normal 50, over a 50, a majority to get something passed. And we're not afraid of them anymore. We put things in place where the American people have a voice. All of their policies are put in place to lower the American people's voice so that they can have the voice and speak against us. And you're afraid of them doing it when you're in power. When are we gonna be confident? When are we gonna be sure of the power? When are you gonna do something for the American people that voted for you? They voted you in, and now you're afraid? Afraid of who? It's so weird to me. Who wins a football game and goes, well, I'm afraid of the fans that we just beat their team. What are you afraid of them for? They're going home sad with the face paint that they're regretting that they wore to this game because they lost. It's so weird. I don't understand that. What fan base then says, well, we got to respect those losers over there. Why? Why? You just lost. You put everything on the line and you lost. Good job. You can say,
totally.
I appreciate they fought hard out there. They really tried their hardest, but you know what? They lost. End of story. Why are we still trying to preserve the voice of the lost? Jesus. They don't do it to us. When's the last time you heard an establishment Republican politician say, you know what? Those progressives out there, we got to pay attention to what they have to say. You know, we got to stop this partisanship. You know, we got to start listening to those California libs, you know, because they're still Americans too. You know what they say about California libs? They say California libs are anti-American, burn the whole place down. Who cares if the fires rage? If we just eliminate those states from the union, we'd be fine. They say the president of the United States said this. So after saying that, and we just sit back and take it, why is it so important to make sure we preserve the thoughts and feelings and emotions of people who literally said, you don't belong in the White House, Joe Biden? I'm sorry, I went up on three different tangents, but it's really
okay. There's a lot of potential explanations, and I don't think we like any of them, JR. But you're right. We do need to make sure that people can vote. And so here's a fun exercise. I saw that Raphael Warnock is sponsoring legislation. It's going to be one of the first big pieces of legislation the Senate's going to consider. It's going to re-strengthen the Voting Rights Act. It's going to increase early voting and a bunch of other things like that. Oh, wait, they're just going to filibuster it, though. Now, can you see why we need to get rid of the filibuster? Because even the solution Jared was talking about will be blocked by the same thing that we're talking about. And really fast, Mitch McConnell wants you to be scared of getting rid of the filibuster. That's why he says it would be a progressive's nightmare. But it won't just be Mitch McConnell. A lot of Democrats, centrists are going to say, no, 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 don't do that. I know, like, theoretically, it would let us do something, and that seems appealing. But in the future, then they'll take control, and then they won't be bound by the filibuster either. Okay, I want you to think, because that might scare some reasonable people. I want you to think about what in reality would actually change under that system. The Republicans have been in charge a couple of times in the past two decades, generally after not winning elections, but we'll leave that for another time. And did they have trouble accomplishing their goals? What were their goals? Their goals were passing tax cuts, and they did it under Bush, and they did it under Trump, with the filibuster existing.
Sure did.
They got their Supreme Court justices, and aside from that, what did it stop them from doing? Like, they got tons of stuff done with executive orders, and regardless of the filibuster existing or not, that will continue. What other legislative goals did the filibuster stop them from pursuing? I don't know, and you don't know, because they don't appear to have any. And so if that continues, and if someday Tucker Carlson's president, and oh no, we got rid of the filibuster, I got news for you. What they're gonna do, they're gonna pass big tax cuts, and they were gonna do that anyway.
Absolutely.
So the situation we have right now, you need to understand, because a lot of Democrats are gonna try to scare you, including Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin, and not doing this. The only difference will be for the opportunities for the left to accomplish something. The right has never been constrained from that. They get whatever they want with the filibuster. We need to get rid of it for us to have a chance. That is equality. And so don't listen to Mitch McConnell try to scare you. Don't listen to the Dems try to scare you. This is the only way that America's problems are gonna be solved.
Can I also tell you, Rand Paul also illustrated, ironically, illustrated exactly what the next Senate will look like without us eliminating the filibuster. Because look at what happened with the impeachment trial, 55-45. They still lost. They still lost that, but it was a direct, by majority vote. Like, the way it should be. And so they tabled that motion to make sure that when they said, oh, it's going to be unconstitutional. When they ran up in the Capitol and tried to kill elected officials, that's the thing that they said it's unconstitutional to not make the guy responsible for and not actually convict him for. So what do you think, if we needed a 60 vote threshold for that, it would have gone on through and the impeachment would have been over. That's what's going to happen with everything Democrats try to put through.
Everything.
They can win 55, 45 all they want. It doesn't mean anything. In this one case, it meant something, but it still means nothing. The majority continues to win. It's insane. It's insane. So they've given you an illustration of the way that they're gonna the way that they're gonna govern, or the way they're gonna continue on in everything that gets that even gets put up.
Yeah.
It's we're in the minority, but we're enough of the minority to still not do anything.
Yeah. The only things that they want are stuff having to do with immigration that they do with executive orders. Let's see, demonizing the LGBTQ community, they do that with executive orders. Most of the stuff with national security, they do with executive orders. You have legislative goals. If you can identify a problem and you want to fix it, they don't have those. The only one they've identified is that rich people don't have enough money yet, and they regularly try to fix that problem. That's it. And I know that it seems like we're simplifying things, and maybe on the margins we are a little bit. But this is the story of American politics going back at least 40 years. They only have one goal. They always accomplish it. The filibuster has never stopped it. Joe Biden has been promising to make climate change and dealing with it a big part of his administration. Well, we've had a little bit of that with some executive orders that we've talked about on the show previously. You can find those videos available on YouTube. Now we've got more. So new executive orders being released, including a working paper with more details by the White House today. The orders will direct the Secretary of the Interior Department to pause on entering into new oil and natural gas leases on public lands and offshore waters to the extent possible, while beginning a rigorous review of all existing fossil fuel leases and permitting practices, according to a fact sheet produced by the White House. So that is good, especially in comparison to the former White House, which tried to get as much of that going as possible, especially in the last few months. Once they realized it was unlikely they would continue, they started selling it off as fast as possible. Here's the issue. They've already sold a lot of it. And so that's a problem going forward. As of 2019, more than 26 million acres of US land were already leased to oil and gas companies. And last year, the Trump administration, in a rush to exploit natural resources hidden beneath publicly owned lands and waters, leased tens of thousands more. So if the administration honors those current contracts, millions of publicly owned acres could be open to fossil fuel extraction in the coming decade. So halting them is something, taking them back much better, because the climate, the atmosphere doesn't just get pumped full of carbon as a result of, like, if we continue to do more of it. The stuff that we've already locked in is just as much of a problem. So this is currently the easier stuff. So far as I can tell, there's nothing in terms of presidential power with executive orders that would stop him from doing that with the past leases, but we'll have to see on that. The current effort, it's something, it's good, but we need much more than that.
Yeah, I'm trying to approach the best way to approach the Biden administration and the things they've done, because it's so early, right? And I'm trying not to put so much of an assumption on the objectives behind these things, but just we can point out maybe some of the holes in it. Because you know, when the Trump administration was in, he was telling us his objectives. So it was very easy to be like, this is what he said he's doing. So there wasn't any speculation about where is this going, what's the plan here, who does he dislike, why is he putting this in place. It was all very openly out there. With this, we still go back to speculating about politicians, exactly what their intentions are. But from this, it seems like it's a couple of band-aids. And maybe, this is the benefit of the doubt from me, maybe they're floating it. And so like, we'll see how the public responds to our leaning this direction. And if they like it, we'll go further. If they don't like it, we'll just stop here and things will go back as it was, which we're fine with too, because come on, there's still money exchanging hands to the right people that we still like and it still give us donations. So I wonder if it's kind of a trial balloon. It's a little bit of something, it's actual something, but it's not all the way something. So I'm waiting to see. And by the way, that's when the American people come into play to understand what's happening and go, wait a second, that's not enough. And if that happens, then they'll respond correctly or fully.
Maybe. I think that we're sort of maybe seeing that in the next topic we're going to talk about. I don't know. I think It's all well and good for him to say that he takes it really seriously. But again, like how many times did we say over the last year or two that it's not just about what you say you want to do, it's about who you are willing to fight. If you're willing to do some stuff about climate change, but you're not gonna really take on these companies, then you really don't care about it. If you're more worried about offending Exxon than you are about saving the climate, you don't really care about the climate. You care about donations going to you and to other Democrats. That's my concern. So we're gonna have to see. Now there's some other good stuff. And again, the overall purpose of the, like I'm naturally a skeptic, but the overall purpose of this block is to give them credit for what they're doing. But we're also not gonna pretend that it's more than it is.
Yeah.
Now that said, let's talk about a little bit more. Federal agencies also will be ordered to eliminate fossil fuel subsidies and identify new opportunities to spur innovation. Overhauling the tax breaks worth billions of dollars to the oil, coal, and gas industries to help pay for his climate change plan was also a major campaign promise. So this would be good. This is something that the Young Turks has been asking for it's 17 years, I don't know, forever. Why are we giving money to the most profitable companies in the history of companies? Why are we doing that? Now, hopefully he'll do that. And that is not nothing. Taking billions of dollars away from these companies, that is about as opposed to their interest as I can imagine, other than, you know, outright banning the development of all fossil fuels or cars that burn them. So that would be good. That would be good. We're not there yet. They haven't actually eliminated them yet, but it's ordering them to identify ways to do this. So we'll have to see.
It's weird. We know a lot of politicians that are getting paid by these companies. By the way, the reason that you said, I wonder what the reason is, and I know you know it, because they're getting paid. That's why. That's why they're going along with this more and really don't have much of a change for that. But if you think about it, just because they know how much Americans are set in their ways, and it's the normalcy. We're like 5-year-olds. It's like we don't want to move to the new house that's better because mom and dad got a better job. We're moving out of the neighborhood because they're 5 years old, that house. They're like, I don't like change. We don't like change. So since we're used to fossil fuels fueling our cars and doing things the way we like it, if it was reversed and we actually had solar energy, because this thing called the sun has always been there. So solar energy.
I don't know, half the time I can't see it.
Wind energy, any of these innovations that actually help with the environment, if those were the norm already, and then some wild-eyed crazy person came up and said, hey, you guys, let's start digging in the ground and pulling this stuff out of it, and then put it in gas stations, and then we'll convert it and put it in your cars, and then it'll drive. People go, this crazy guy. We already have a complete and total industry that's based in this, and it's perfectly fine. In our case, we're already used to the coal and oil industries doing the things they do, except they're also detrimental to our environment. So we also don't want to change things because we're 5-year-olds that don't like change. I don't know how to change the mindset of folks enough for us to realize you can change things. And when you give all this money to these industries, guess what? You can give all that money to a new industry that's innovative and changes things. But that's too scary for us because, oh my God, we're going to change things. And this comes from me, who has owned two 1988 cars, an 84 car, a 78, a 73, and a 71. Six different cars that were pre-1990, pre-1985. And I love the smell of emissions. I love the smell of my gas. I love the smell of my car going. I love it. I love it. It's a real car to me. But you know what? I'm willing to give it up because I would like for our environment to at least be able to be. So when I get out of my car that goes, I'd like to breathe when I stand up. That's just that small thing. So it's not like I'm this huge Prius guy because I hate those cars, but you have to understand the things. You have to understand what you're giving up for what you're getting. And it's just being an adult.
Yeah, yeah. I can confirm JR has never owned a car with fewer than 9 cylinders. Anyway, yeah.
Sorry, you know what we need to tangent do?
To finish, we just need to get you into like a really high performance electric car. I want you to feel that instant torque of a really high performance electric car. Yeah. I had a really cheap one and it felt amazing. But anyway. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about Biden's recent moves on climate change, including a couple of important stance changes. So one is prioritizing it when it comes to national security. So involving those things, the intersectionality of our national interests and the fight against climate change. The other is an understanding of the fact that climate change and also environmental concerns more broadly, pollution and things like that, have not negatively affected all of us equally. It has negatively affected all of us, but not equally. So what they're doing is They're setting broad new foreign policy goals, including specify that climate change for the first time will be a core part of all foreign policy and national security decisions. Hey, if that makes it slightly less likely that they go to war to take oil, I'm happy for it. That is not a bad thing necessarily. The other is that this is a few things all combined, but he's gonna create a civilian climate corps to mobilize people to work in conservation, create a task force to assemble a government-wide action plan for reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and create several new commissions and positions within the government focused on environmental justice and environmentally friendly job positions, or job creation, I should say, including directing agencies in the federal government to invest in low income and minority communities that have traditionally obviously been hit much harder by pollution and will be hit harder by the effects of climate change as well. So these are good. These are also fairly loosey goosey aspirational sorts of things that by themselves don't accomplish anything like the actual investments, which we need to see, or the actual decisions that will be made in terms of foreign policy now incorporating climate change as a major consideration. Those could be huge. And obviously anything like the Green New Deal for it to exist would need to consider these things. But this isn't, I would say, the more loose sort of vague aspirational area of his climate change effort so far.
And I think that leads to my assumption that it's a bit of a trial balloon situation. I think also with the yesterday he announced all the executive orders and changes he wants to do with racial injustice in the country and all that. Similarly, it does some stuff, but it doesn't do everything. You know, it kind of floats and like, let's see if everyone really cares about this racial injustice thing. So I'm gonna let them know I'm on their side, and I'll do more once everyone lets me know that they agree with me. So yeah, hopefully.
So
it's up to us now.
We'll see. I mean, they're talking about conserving at least 30% of federal land and oceans by 2030. It's also by 2030, and I remember what Greta said yesterday about these like far off goals and everything. A total review of the last administration's environmental regulations, which is good. But some of the big stuff is, reasserting emissions standards and regulations on things like vehicle pollution, industrial pollution, methane, and those sorts of things. That was stuff that Obama had done some good regulatory work on, but a lot of that was reversed under Trump. So we need to make sure that Biden gets it into place for Tucker Carlson to take away in a couple of years.
So John, do you think if we eliminate some of the other things like some of these corporations that pollute and water and everything, maybe I can keep my gas powered car? If we eliminate the other stuff, maybe I can keep my 9-cylinder engines. What do you think? How about that compromise? Can I move across the aisle with your Prius drivers?
What if we had electric cars that you could turn on an awesome surround sound speaker system that would do that sound, but you could also turn it off sometimes?
Oh, I heard about that idea. They said they're gonna make Prius and start going or make a sound. It's like nobody wants that mechanical electric sound. My cousin has an electric car or one of those hybrids or something, and then he pushes a button and it turns into like, it starts going drum, drum, drum. I was like, that's not real. That's a computer trying to imitate real. Stop it.
Oh, a lot of those cars are tuned to produce that sound anyway. It's not what the engine would ideally actually do anyway.
Well, the engine would ideally be way louder. It's an explosion.
Maybe. I know what people do. I owned a Harley. I know what people do to increase the sound. It's not like that's real. That's like artificially produced. But anyway, I guess it's real in some way. We'll see. We'll see. You know what would also be a nice like benefit that we'll get other than all the stuff about the climate and everything to getting rid of those cars? Do you have any idea how loud highways are and how loud main roads are? I live like a block away from a highway and I can hear it all the time. And I have been at houses with yards right off of main streets where it is just so much noise pollution. Think of the peace of mind, the peace and quiet will get.
That's the last thing we're worried about. You live in LA, there's sound everywhere.
Noise pollution sucks. Everywhere, as well as regular pollution. It's not just the climate change effect. Communities along the 405 are affected by way more pollution than other communities, and that is unequal as well.
That's true. It's correct.
Yeah. I am correct. Thank you.
Score point for John there. You know, I'm here for unity. I'm on the work cross aisle. Look, check it out. Unified in progress. We're going to progress and we're going to come across that. We're going to have like, what's the Dodge Challengers? But I mean, just maybe kind of loud.
Anyway, yeah, this guy says he's for unity, but he hasn't given me his dog yet. So I don't think he really wants unity. Anyway, let's continue on with this. I like this. Biden doing some things, but we have also got a little bit of strike back. So let's talk about that now. Reminder that while Biden can do a lot, Biden can pass executive orders, they can try to pass legislation. Remember when we were saying that all the judges Trump got in place before he was taken out is gonna be a problem going forward for the progressive agenda? Well, you're getting some previews of that. Because a federal judge in Texas just temporarily blocked the Biden administration's pause on deportations. So he had blocked most deportations for about 100 days. And a Trump appointed judge said no, at least for a little bit. Now, let's talk about how we got to this. Tuesday's order stems from a lawsuit filed by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton challenging the 100-day pause on deportations. The complaint cited in part an agreement signed between the DHS and Texas in the waning days of the Trump presidency that required the department to consult the state before changing or modifying policies. Let's pause for just one fast second. The reason they put those things in the last days was to specifically stymie the Biden administration. We actually talked about a few things like that, not all in the area of immigration, but they tried to make it more difficult for him to swiftly effectuate change. And here we're seeing it. So Judge Drew Tipton said the temporary restraining order was appropriate under the Administrative Procedure Act and blocked the Biden administration from executing its deportation pause for 14 days. So that is a specific legal challenge to it that is limited in terms of how long it's gonna stop it. But it's also not the only challenge that it's going to face. And it is not the only thing where the status quo of, you know, the sort of anti-immigrant forces that were put into place under Trump are having an effect. Many people have seen that ICE is continuing deportations even before this. They were told to stop them, they decided, no, we really like deporting people, so we're gonna do it. Now, thankfully, there are people who are raising concerns about this. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted about one particular case that Anna Pressley had been talking about. So Anna Pressley is trying to draw attention to one of these forced deportations. And AOC says people must understand the depth of what's happening here. The president of the United States has ordered a halt to deportations. ICE, a federal agency, is refusing to comply. There's no reforming this rogue department. It's time for a new just vision. And that is why many people have called for abolishing ICE altogether. Mm-hmm. Maybe not a bad idea. Maybe something Biden should look into. Maybe something he's probably not going to. But anyway, JR. It isn't all as smooth as, you know, passing an executive order. There are gonna be challenges to all of these. The climate change ones we just talked about are going to be challenged and possibly delayed.
I was just gonna bring up those because there's a bunch of lingering things that President Trump left in place, knowingly, not from his own brain, from people surround him, about ways to leave things in place that will continue to sabotage any kind of progress on certain issues. One of his big ones was immigration and deportations, because he started his entire campaign in 2015, first thing, I hate immigrants, first thing he said. So this is, he has to continue his legacy. We talk about every other president's legacy, a lot of times it's based in things that they think at least are beneficial to the country. His is just based strictly in hate. So they make sure they galvanize a few of these things left in place on an outgoing thing. So this judge, honestly, maybe I'd have to know further about who he is and the way he ruled, but there was something put in place that he has to honor because it was a real thing that Trump left. It was a policy, it was there, it was an agreement. So they get to now throw up their hands and say, hey, we got a guarantee that you guys would allow us to continue to do this. So the judge in a way has to allow that to happen. So maybe I'm wrong about that, but I can at least see from this stage, he has to honor what horrible policies and things this guy just put in place before he left. I mean, he also commuted and pardoned 175 people before he left. We can't change that either. He was allowed to do it. So from now, as you said, and as AOC was pointing out, maybe things need to change with this thing even existing. Because now it's just an agency that doesn't care about what the president will say. It's just left to the orders of the previous one that was doing disastrous things, and previous presidents for that doing disastrous things on immigration. So we need to have a redo again. Republicans come in office and they put in new policies and new people and completely subvert an entire government agency. And we just go, I can't believe they did that. Oh, the news is on. And we move on.
I know.
They subvert it completely. We complain about it and move on. So when someone insinuates, as AOC did, changing this, she's gonna catch hate like, how dare you change a government policy? How dare you change a government agency? They do it all the time. President Trump did it consistently. Took out people that would actually help that agency, and their objective is to flip it, to make it a detriment to our society. And we can't do something that helps?
It's weird. I would argue, JR, we want to be more honest. When Trump came in, he did what Republicans do, which is you take something like the EPA and you put like a gas lobbyist in charge of it. So you still have the organization, but like you have a person who's going to really dishonestly undercut its entire mission. I don't want to do that with ICE. I don't want to put some like radical pro-immigration person in charge of ICE. I'm going to be honest with you and just get rid of it. That's what I want. It shouldn't exist. We're not trying to like behind the scenes undercut it. No, we want to get rid of it because it doesn't need to be there. And it ain't that old. People act like that's as old as the filibuster. It's not. We can get rid of it. We'd be just fine.
Honestly, really I'm okay. Yeah, go.
No. What were you gonna say?
I'm okay with doing it that way, changing over some leadership and stuff, so that because again, a lot of American people don't pay attention to the makeup of these organizations. But if they hear they're getting rid of this government agency that's helping us with our immigration problem, because sure, there's immigration problems, and people will start having this automatic knee-jerk reaction. They're gonna take away this thing that's helping us when they don't know what it's doing in the negative aspects of our society. Mm-hmm. So sure, change over the leadership, still call it ICE, but then do something better. And do something that works for immigration in the country.
I just don't know that I would actually trust that they would be able to accomplish.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, but maybe. Yeah. Anyway, I want to update on a bit of breaking news that we had yesterday. That was live on the show. We found out that Biden was going to be ending future contracts with private prisons. And so this was on Tuesday, an executive order that directed the Justice Department to phase out its use of private prisons. But we still have to wait to find out more about that. The order doesn't apply to ICE. The Biden administration is considering issuing a similar order to cover immigration detention, but has no immediate plans to do so. So I have a point I want to make about that. But JR, we found out live on the show that they were going to be stopping contracts with private prisons. We still don't know what's going to happen to the current contracts. How long does the average current contract run? How significant is this, and how fast is this significant? So these are questions that still need to be answered, but it was a good thing to see, and it was a promise that he's making good on.
With the private prisons, with the Department of Justice, and not stretching private to prisons. ICE. Yeah, again,
I'm talking about just the private prison part for right now. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's what I was saying as far as yesterday with the racial inequality stuff when he signed all those and made the announcement. It's a bit of a trial balloon, so it helps to a degree. It's some steps. I won't even call them baby steps. It's some significant steps, but I think they're looking to see what the response to their approach to this being, let's eliminate private prisons. Let's see how the private prison industry responds. Let's see how society responds. Let's see if they really care about the racial and judicial inequality in our country. And again, it's on us now to let them know, yeah, this is the right direction, do more. Instead of, yeah, this is the right direction, I guess you're done. And they'll go, oh, I guess we are done. Good, we got by that without doing much. Because let's keep it real, many of them don't want to do a lot. They want to do enough that help their political careers. If we always approach everything a politician says and does with, how is this helping their political career? I don't care what party they're from. That's always the number one objective many times, is how is this going to help my political career? This is now their career. Then you can have an approach to it to think, have they done enough yet for me? Because right now, all they're looking to do is just enough for themselves. So yeah, it's a bit, and we need more. Only the Department of Justice is the one that's eliminating some of these contracts with private prisons. Is this going to sweep for the entire country, for state prisons, any other private prisons that have any kind of
I don't know
contracts with government agencies, you know?
I don't know exactly how that would work out in terms of what the ability to bar those might be. It might be just a federalism thing that they can't. I don't know, honestly. We'll see. But for now, the concern is that it doesn't include the immigration detention facilities, which, you know, it's like if only there had been a lot of bad news about what happened in those to inspire a new Democratic president to do something about it. Oh, wait, there was. You know, not only just the horrible conditions, the massive spread of COVID, the epidemic of sexual assault, the sexual coercion, the harvesting of body parts. I don't know what else I'm supposed to come up with, but apparently it's not enough yet. Although, notably, Biden appears to have promised to do exactly this, banning those private immigration detention facilities. On his the Biden plan for strengthening America's commitment to justice, it says stop corporations from profiting off of incarceration. Biden will end the federal government's use of private prisons, building off an Obama-Biden administration policy rescinded by the Trump administration. And he will make clear that the federal government should not use private facilities for any detention, including detention of undocumented immigrants. That seems very clear to me. So why aren't you doing it? It would have been very easy. You could have just taken the executive order you passed and say, oh, also the immigration ones. That would have been very simple and consistent because you already promised it. Why would you? You promised the two parts, the private prisons and the immigration detention facilities in the same paragraph on your promises. Why would you do one and not the other?
Can I tell you why?
Why?
Because John Smith in Iowa maybe heard that first part. He's like, oh, they're doing it. Great. And he goes back to his job. And he doesn't have the time, energy, or wherewithal to then dig through the next step and be like, let me make sure this administration, this government agency is doing that next step and what they said they're going to do and what they promised and what they even announced, had a whole press conference about even. Because we go, I guess they're going to do it. If there's not enough follow up from folks that consistently pay attention to everything they do, and then enough people listen to those folks, because there's plenty of experts that'll tell us what's happening, enough people know it, then they have no pressure to continue to do it. You know, the John Smiths of the world don't have to care anymore. They're like, yeah, they're doing it. And then they hear 2 years later, wait, whatever happened to that one policy? I thought we got rid of that. I thought we did this a certain way. No, you thought so, because that's how politicians work. They tell you and they make sure they get your support and then not do much work. Imagine if your job dealt with that. Tell your boss, yeah, I'm gonna get to it by before 3 o'clock today. And then it's been 2 weeks and you go,
eh. Or 2 years. Exactly. Okay, well, then all we can do is keep bringing it up and hope that they care about it, but also provide a warning to Joe Biden. So, Joe, not only would doing this be making good on your promise, but you need to understand that these places have been the site of more concentrated evil than any other buildings in America over the past few years. So, in 6 months or a year, when some guard at a core civic private immigration detention facility rapes an immigrant woman and then deports her so that he won't get in trouble, that's gonna be your scandal because you could have shut it down. If you leave those open and more of what's already been happening continues to happen, sure, we can be mad at the guard and we will be, and we can be mad at core civic and we will be, but we're also gonna be mad at you. And you remember all those bad news cycles about Trump and Stephen Miller and all of that. So Joe Biden, is that what you want? Do you want to own all of that evil, all of that cruelty, the deaths, the rapes, the maimings, all of that? Because so far you seem to be signing up for a future of that. And I'm hoping we're not going to forget. I'm hoping everyone in the audience won't forget. In 6 months or a year, when one of these scandals comes, it could have been ended if he had shut down these facilities.
And it'll be one of those moments that frustrate me every time that'll prove the 1% of Republicans' point correct. Whenever there's two things that always happen. One that always happens. Republicans say, you know, there's racists in the Democratic Party. And then a bunch of Democrats have to go, no, there's not. You guys have all the racists. No, there's plenty of racists across the entire country. Yes, there's some in the Democratic Party. So when Republicans say that, it's not that it's untrue. It's that they're trying to deflect from the fact that they just did something really blatantly racist and supported a racist. And they just want to deflect attention to other party that also has racists too. Anyway, so to prove their point is what's annoying to me. So you'll have them come in and say one of these scandals happens under Biden, and you'll have plenty of Democrats that will ignore it, defend it. When Trump was doing it, they didn't ignore it and they didn't defend it because now it's switched over and we can't have this bad PR. I know how to eliminate that. Follow what John just said. Do something to make sure that doesn't happen under your watch and you won't be on the hook for the same stuff that Trump was doing.
Yeah. Out there.
And then when progressives will complain about it, if it happens, then there'll be this fracture within the party. And then progressives versus establishment people, how come you Bernie bros keep attacking Joe Biden? You know, he's in office now. Did you want Trump there? No, we want him to do the right thing now that he's there. It's such a simple equation.
And by the way, like I remember, I wasn't with TYT in the beginning of the Obama administration, but there was a lot of hopes that were placed in the Obama administration. And when they started not making good on those promises and when they started doing the things that they did, the drone strikes and all of that, TYT was very critical. and a lot of establishment Dems hated TYT for criticizing Obama for literally years. What we've done for the first week so far, we have done everything we can to give Biden credit for the good things he's doing while also expecting more. And our expecting more ain't going away either. So Biden gets to determine what the stance of TDR and TYT and other shows like us is for the next 4 years. Keep doing stuff like this, gonna be pretty positive coverage because it deserves to be. But we are gonna be watching. It ain't just for immigration facilities. Now, we already knew that Marjorie Taylor Greene was out of her mind. She believes in QAnon. She believes that Satanists rape and murder children and drink their blood. We're finding out that she thinks that Hillary Clinton wore a child's face before absorbing its life essence. These are all things that we found out from her social media account. And we're finding out even more that for me, if I were an elected official, would be a little bit concerning. Because in one post, way back in January 2019, Green liked a comment that said a bullet to the head would be quicker to remove House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. In other posts, Green liked comments about executing FBI agents who, in her eyes, were part of the deep state working against Trump. Because remember, all of those right wingers who say they support law enforcement and back the blue and Blue Lives Matter and all of that are always ready to murder cops and federal agents when they think it's necessary. The Boogaloo Boys are perfectly happy to kill cops if it gets the cops to overreact and kill some BLM protesters. So here you're seeing the actual posts. Now, this is important for you to see it because she, of course, is going to deny it. But first, there's more. In one post from April 2018, Green wrote conspiratorially about the Iran deal, one of former Barack Obama's signature foreign policy achievements. A commenter asked Green, "Now do we get to hang them?" Meaning H and O, referring to Obama and Hillary Clinton. She replied, "Stage is being set, players are being put in place. We must be patient. This must be done perfectly or liberal judges would let them off." Elsewhere on her Facebook page, she liked comments that advocated to arrest Obama and former Secretary of State John Kerry, and one comment that said, "Hang that bitch," referring to either one or both, I don't know. She also liked a comment that urged for Civil War 2.0 to begin. So we're gonna give her response such as it is, but wanted to give JR an opportunity to respond to multiple calls for her political opponents to be murdered.
Well, I guess not surprising. I mean, everyone knew this about her. When you knew a QAnon was running for office, we knew that this is the background of the person. But we're in such an insane political landscape now. It's like it's a significant portion of the Republican Party. So it's a winning strategy, it's a winning message. And they know that. Again, it's why the established members of the Republican Party that aren't just new to Congress like her are backing stuff like this, because that's their party now. She is the future of the Republican Party. The old members of the Republican Party are willing to go along with stuff like this, or then publicly say, "We'll talk to her about it," or "This will be great," or "She's just another member of Congress." Yeah, maybe those statements that she said were unsavory. But it's okay. They always want to put some lighthearted descriptions to the things that they've done and then privately tell them, "Hey, just tone it down publicly. Say all that horrible stuff in private instead. You need to learn how to be a real Republican politician. Say the bad stuff privately and the good stuff publicly, and you'll be just fine." That's the conversation.
I think it might be turning, though. I agree. And she has tried to distance herself a little bit from QAnon. And when people say that, they mean she doesn't openly say it anymore. She's never said that it was wrong. All that stuff about pieces being put into place and all of that, that's just QAnon stuff. Because remember, and I apologize if you've heard me say this many times, including the pre-show, get used to it. I'm gonna say it a lot. She believes whatever crazy stuff she reads on the internet. That is it. That's it. Some stupid lying moron puts something about Satan on a forum and she thinks, "Oh my God, that's what's happening." That's literally how she approaches the world. That is her worldview. Whatever she reads, if it says bad things about people she hates, she believes it. It's convenient. Now, we have already showed you the posts. She did it, but here is what she has to say. "Fake news CNN is writing yet another hit piece on me, focused on my time before running for political office. I will never back down to the enemy of the American people, and neither should you." So first of all, if our fear is that you want to murder politicians, you saying "I will never back down to the enemy of the American people" doesn't really reassure me. That said, I am so done with any criticism being pitched as a hit piece. smears. We've seen that for years now. Pointing out your record, what you've said, what you've done isn't a smear job. It's inconvenient reality. If you didn't want to have those things tied to you, maybe don't like posts calling for your political opponents to be murdered. Maybe don't talk about faces being ripped off and eaten by female politicians. If that's not a thing that you wanted to follow you, okay? We grew up being told don't post crazy stuff on the internet because you might lose a job. I guess maybe Congress could be one of those that you lose, but probably not. Probably not. So that's our statement.
Yeah, that's our statement based off of yeah, people writing something. Again, there's no rejection of what she said. I never said that stuff. They're making it up. Fake news. None of that was said because it's all real. But so in order for people to overlook that, you have to go incendiary and say, I'm never gonna back down. Back down off of what? Do you still believe in those things? Or do you not? Now, you could rehab your image to a degree, at least for the idiots that want to still vote for you. And you could say, yeah, those things I said in the past, I was just this random private citizen and I was mad and I would post and like incendiary things because I was mad. But now I've understood you can easily rehab this for the people who for some reason don't think you're that bad of a person, but they're so steeped in their ignorance and hatred for the country, they can't even do that. They can't even do that because there's enough people that are okay with her saying, yeah, you're right, they're the enemy of our people. When I say let's put a bullet in Nancy Pelosi's head, that's great. And I just said that before and they just wanna bring up old stuff. That's the explanation. That's the explanation.
By the way, it was 2 years ago. It wouldn't be okay if it was 20 years ago. It was 2 years ago. You talked about shooting Nancy Pelosi in the head after the third season of Stranger Things, okay? Only after the first, if it's as old as the first season, I'll give it to you. But no.
It wasn't youthful exuberance. I was only a teenager and I was just trying to fit in with the high school crowd. None of that, which I don't accept those either. But if you did make a mistake, own up to it and say so. But I'm only saying that because there's no way she's ever gonna do that.
I know, God. There's more. Maybe we'll bring it back tomorrow. Her stalking of the survivors of mass shootings. Sorry, alleged mass shootings, because remember, she doesn't believe any of those that happened either. Like there is no, I cannot express how insane this woman is. But I'm gonna try.
There's more.
I'm trying.
You know, when the glasses come off of John's face, it's all over.
Anyway, thank you. It's just smudged because they're cheap glasses and I've scratched them all up. But anyway, we will get to that tomorrow. For now, JR, as always, thank you so much. Hope that the sprockets made you feel a little bit more at home here on the stream, but we appreciate you.
I enjoyed them. Again, as usual, we're going to need like 2 hours on Wednesdays, bro, because we talk too much.
I know. Eventually, TDR will be a 2-hour show. At some point, we'll see. I mean, it kind of is with the pre-show anyway, but okay, it'll be a 3-hour show. Okay, JR, thank you.
Thank you. See you guys.
As soon as the COVID-19 vaccine started to be approved, and with different states having different regulations for who can qualify to get them, you knew that there were going to be efforts for people to game the system or jump the line, perhaps by traveling from one state to another. Well, joining us now to break down one form that's come in is a health reporter for Business Insider, Andrea Michelson. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me, John.
Very glad to have you on. And you wrote about vaccine tourism, which is an amazing term there. But can you tell us a little bit about what this is looking like?
Sure, yeah. So vaccine tourism is a term that's just used to describe people traveling from their home state or country to another state or country to get their COVID-19 vaccines. It can get a little bit murky because, of course, in some situations we have part-time residents of certain states and they have to make the decision about where to get vaccinated. So it is quite a complicated issue.
And so why Florida? Why in particular is it happening with them?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of reasons why it's happening in Florida. Towards the beginning of the vaccine rollout in the United States, Florida had one of the looser criterias for eligibility. They were opening up vaccine eligibility for seniors age 65 and older right away. A lot of states have switched to that model by now, but there was a period of time where a lot of people would qualify in Florida, but wouldn't qualify in another state. I think it's also a complicated situation in Florida because, as I mentioned before, there is a population of part-time residents there, or snowbirds, people who typically winter in Florida. Some of them canceled their trips due to the pandemic, but others are there just existing in the community and kind of live in a weird bubble between vaccine tourism and actual residency. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, regardless of which of those two groups you live in, either someone who has a home for part of the year there, or if you're just traveling there to try to get it, it is likely, I assume, that these are people with significantly more financial means than many of those who are hoping to get the vaccine.
Right. I think that the true vaccine tourists, at least, a lot of them are financially well off and do have the connections to be able to book an appointment in Florida, even if they don't live there. You definitely need to be well connected or very lucky in order to get an appointment in most states, especially one where that's not your community. So that is pretty common, I would say.
And do we know anything about so far, is Florida one of the states that's really going through all of the vaccine that's been made available to it, which would potentially produce a situation where those who are jumping the line might actually be delaying someone else getting access to it? Or are they doing pretty well in terms of being able to vaccinate those who are qualified, who are trying to get it?
We did hear some reports of long lines in Florida towards the beginning of rollout. I'm not sure if that situation has resolved, but I think a lot of people did see sort of news stories and pictures on Twitter of a lot of elderly people waiting in line and then getting turned away, sent home because they were out of vaccine doses at like 10 o'clock in the morning. So in cases like that, it's hard to say whether there were vaccine tourists getting the vaccines that were used up earlier that morning, but it is possible that that could be the case.
And what has the reaction been so far from the state government?
Well, vaccine tourism might be on the decline, actually, because the state government issued a public health advisory kind of prohibiting it. They said that they are reserving their vaccine doses for part-time residents and full-time residents only. So that is yes to snowbirds, but no to vaccine tourists. Whether they enforce that is another question.
Yeah, you have a quote from DeSantis in your article that he doesn't seem to be particularly bothered by it, at least based off of that. I mean, maybe there's some context necessary, but it didn't seem like it was really bothering him that that might be happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of public health experts would actually agree with that, that in general, getting vaccines in arms is a good thing. And if these are people who are in the community for part-time, whether they're visiting family or have a part-time residence there, it would be good for the community for them to be vaccinated and increase the herd immunity there. So I think in that vein, the governor's not discouraging people who are truly in the Florida community from getting vaccinated, but he is discouraging people from flying in with the intention of getting their vaccine there because it's easier than doing it at home.
Well, and I imagine that unnecessary flying during the worst part of the pandemic has its own risks. Does like the CDC or has the White House provided any sort of guidance to try to stop people from doing this, especially traveling long distance, perhaps by air for this purpose?
Yeah, that's a tricky one because you have a camp of people on one side who are saying airplanes in a vacuum are relatively safe places. Like they're well ventilated, people are supposed to wear masks, but when you kind of take that perspective, you're not considering the other aspects of travel, like what you're doing in the community you're traveling to, what you could be bringing back to your home community, and then also sort of the steps in between, like the airport, the Uber, wherever else people might be going on their way. So I think in that sense, there are a lot of risks of travel, and I think a lot of public health experts would discourage unnecessary travel.
Exactly. And to anyone watching this who's perhaps thinking about engaging in cross-country vaccine tourism, if you've gone this long without getting COVID, traveling and perhaps exposing yourself to it seems like the last thing that you'd actually want. So I would tread carefully there. But in any event, anyone watching this who'd like some more information, Andrea's work is available on Business Insider. You can see her article breaking down vaccine tourism in more detail. And we really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Thanks again for having me.
By the time you're watching this, Wall Street might not exist anymore. So I want to make sure that we get on this as fast as we can. A lot's been going on with GameStop and short calls or something else financial. Anyway, gamers are up to something and I want to understand it. So we decided to reach out to our financial expert, the Minister of Stockery, Dan Evans, host of the Power Report, host of Audio Face Podcast, and a longtime friend of the show, used to be on the show. How's it going, Dan?
Always great to be with you, John. I could not think of a better way to spend my time than talking to John Iadarola, one of my favorite people on earth, about stonks, baby. Always goes up, woo woo.
To the moon. Okay, so for people who might not understand this, not me, you know, somebody, basically what has been going on over the past couple days?
Right, so a lot of the main hubbub has been around GameStop stock. Now, it's usually these stocks, you know, they go up, they go down. That's kind of the gist of it. But there are some interesting things happening with GameStop stock specifically, which led to a Reddit forum called Wall Street Bets. Wall Street Bets is kind of ridiculous. It's known for kind of just like a bunch of tomfoolery, essentially. But they essentially found out through some pretty easy to understand, or like easy to find out, like they're publicly available information about who was shorting GameStop. Basically, to get rid of the financial jargon, who had invested in the idea that GameStop stock was going to continue to go down. They were failing, losing out to companies like Amazon and Target, yet another casualty of the COVID-19 pandemic on the economy, right? But not to these bettors who are, they're known for doing wild things, and most of these things are ridiculous, but they all got together to, in a semi-coordinated fashion, coordinate so that the stock price of GameStop would shoot up to these ridiculous levels. I think like it's now at $300 right now. A while ago, it was barely at like 30 or 50 from a couple days ago. And what that does for the short sellers is that it puts them in a position to where, because of the contract they made betting for the stock to go down, because it's going up, they're responsible for the amount of price it's gone up for. And we don't really feel sympathy for these people, because the people who are betting on GameStop stock to go down are hedge fund managers. This is what they do. They bet on companies to fail. They put their fingers on the lever with the millions and billions of dollars they have in their investment bank, in their investment funds. And they're just kind of off to the races with it. So long story short, this is like a true Robin Hood story, where the people who usually do the screwing over are getting screwed over. So it's fun for all involved. And even a regular Joe can make a couple bucks off of it.
And you know, sort of perfectly appropriately, many of the people are doing this on Robin Hood, the app. And I think it's, is it Melvin is the hedge fund that might have lost billions of dollars as a result of this?
Yeah.
But was Melvin, almost instantly bailed out.
Yeah, it's Melvin Capital. And this is hedge funds, all of this jargon can get really complicated, but all you need to know about hedge funds, they're similar to venture capital funds, which we've talked about. Mitt Romney used to run a prominent venture capital fund, Bain Capital, and they're a good example, because they're often called vulture capital funds. Because what they often do is they buy up distressed assets, companies that are about to go out of business, like Bain Capital did with KB Toys and Toys R Us. They sell it off for whatever is reasonable, the real estate that the stores had, the pension plans that the employees of Toys R Us were depending on, and then they liquidate the assets. They sell everything, they fire the employees, and they make off with their check. They're very clearly about to do the same thing with GameStop, but literally just a bunch of Redditors bored at home waiting for Biden to get those $2,000/$1,400/$8 in Disney Plus stimulus checks. Like, these people are just kind of taking matters in their own hands, and it's really economically savvy. I don't think this will happen many, many times, because it's a complicated sort of trick they pulled. But again, just as a socialist Marxist economist, it's very funny to watch.
Yeah, and making it a little bit more difficult for them to do this is that all of the most powerful people in America have been coordinating over the last day to stop it. Literally stopping trading on particular stocks, which I guess they can do. Like TD Ameritrade's like, no, you can't trade that stock right now because you're doing bad things. Which is amazing in the supposed free market, where stocks go up and go down, as you said, that's the way it's supposed to work. But really fast, obviously many people watching this are not gonna be like surprised to find out that we have a negative view of hedge funds in general. But specifically in this area, you laid out what they do when they sort of pick over the bones of these companies. But when they stake out a position like with GameStop, where they short it basically, and they say it's gonna go down, that does send signals to other potential investors, right? Doesn't that sort of pollute them from wanting to put money in these companies, and sort of puts downward pressure on the stock price, that few are gonna wanna bet against a company of this size that seems to believe it knows what's gonna happen?
Well, yeah, I think that's true, John. there is a case where there's some risk after this. Of course, if it's happened once, it's happened again, if I think I understand the idea of your question. Whereas like these kind of short bets may now seem extra risky, knowing that if it's a popular company like AMC Theaters, Blockbuster, or a couple of other ones that have gone up in a couple hours lately. But the sort of thing, I think one of our mutual friends, Jordan, put it well. It's kind of like an old stock kind of trading adage, is that you want to buy the rumor and sell the news. Because once it's already a big sort of news hubbub, everyone's getting into it. Even people who are barely interested in Robinhood or haven't touched the app in months are like, oh, maybe I should get in on this. It's already too late. These markets move very quickly. And so it's unlikely to happen again. As you kind of alluded to earlier, there's now this whole regulatory push that, oh, we can't get you the $2,000 checks immediately. We can definitely prevent you from doing financial tomfoolery immediately. We'll stop that for sure.
Immediately.
There's absolutely a push for that. But I think the other thing we're kind of watching out for here is that hedge funds get away with this every single day. They're getting away with it today. They're going to get away with it tomorrow. They're going to continue to do it because this is endemic of our economic system that is very out of touch with the real lives of what people are doing. Like, I remember seeing a chart maybe a couple of days ago, but that depending on by state, between 21 and 41% of tenants in every single state are basically at risk of being evicted or past due on rent because of this crisis. And we're not really affecting that. Meanwhile, these hedge fund managers are playing with millions and billions of dollars, treating these long established companies. Maybe you don't have sympathy for GameStop, but they're treating these companies like bets, like card game. Mm-hmm. It's really just a game to them. And so I think the more people understand that a lot of our economic dogma is really just a game for rich people, the less we get pulled back by arguments that are going to come from Republicans the upcoming weeks and months about the deficit or the debt or how we should worry about these interests. Because it's very clear in situations like these, especially, which side they're on.
As you point out, this is just fancy betting. And that went well, you know, in 2006, 2007, 2008, that went well for the economy. Really fast though, I want to say it's like some people, I guess, are getting frustrated by the fact that's going on because they're like, well, why are you guys doing this? Like, stocks are supposed to be based on something and now they're not based on anything. Man, Tesla, like Elon Musk became the most like richest person on the planet over the last year. Tesla, what are they selling, 10 times as many cars, 50 times as many cars? No, it's not based on anything anyway, which is my fear, but or my frustration. But really fast, there is one more topic I want to talk to you about, which is the potential victim here. Which I don't really care what happens to Melvin Capital. I don't know Melvin Capital. I don't know anything about that. But my fear is the people who are not following Jordan's adage to sell the news. Some people, especially the many Americans who are even more economically desperate than they were a year ago, are seeing, oh my God, wait, there's a potential opportunity to make a bunch of money. And some of them might be buying at 250, 300 on GameStop. And so my fear is that there are going to be some people who come into this at the tail end and they're going to lose everything they have. That's my fear. What do you think about that?
It's an absolutely valid fear. And unfortunately, it's just a case that happens all the time. Robinhood, a bunch of other these apps have fine print warnings about making sure that, hey, these things are very careful. You're spending your own money all the time. They're volatile assets. They're oftentimes very complicated. So if you don't know what you're doing, be careful. People don't heed those warnings anyways. And a lot of times people like me will come on shows and say something along the lines of, I'm not a financial expert. Please don't take what I'm saying as legal advice. But the truth is, you get to an important point, John, is that we've been under lockdown for 10, almost 11 months, depending on where you're at. We're just coming out of those seemingly too early, but that's a different conversation. And those of us who aren't as lucky as yourself or me, who have been able to like work at home for much of this time, unfortunately, we're struggling and like they're suffering. And so there's going to be a rush to go to these kinds of things. But I want to tell those people to know that this exists out there and use this as a lesson. But when it comes to your personal financial safety, don't waste like any some like little money you have on something as volatile as this. In general, another good financial adage is don't get in the stock market with money you're not willing to lose entirely, because that can very much happen. And this case is extra funny because they lost more than what they bet, this hedge fund company. So there's that. But of course, that's funny when it happens to hedge funds who do this for a living. It's not funny when it happens to people who are on their last leg and may see this as an opportunity. So please don't do that.
Exactly, exactly. Tread carefully. Dan, as always, we appreciate you joining us. Where can people watch or listen to your content?
Just as with everyone, follow me on Twitter at Dan from the Web. There's Power Report that I do. There's a podcast about political things, interviewing people. May have you on one day. That's a stretch goal. Audio Face, I talk about music. And I Twitch stream on Fridays from 5 p.m. Eastern to starting at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. Just follow me on Twitter for that info.
Awesome.
Dan Thank from the again. Web. Yes. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.